Hey, Mel.
Hey, Saeed.
Another episode of Two Writers Talking Shit.
Another amazing episode. So excited to be here.
I know. I just got back from Austin, and the amount of people that came up saying they listened to the podcast is amazing. The writers, and, you know, so we had to get another legendary person that is somebody that helped me out on my road. Carol Kirshner is here. And listen, I remember when I was writing at home, maybe like 5 years ago before I entered UCLA online writing class, and I was looking for any interviews on YouTube about screenwriting. And Carol came up on Film Courage, Scripts and Scribes, WGA, and you had an immense amount of knowledge that helped me, guide me on the way. And I want to thank you for that.
Oh, Saeed, it's so my pleasure. So my pleasure. Because you're amazing. And the 5 minutes into meeting you, I went, oh, that man is going to go far. So it's mutual admiration.
What's funny, though, is just a side note. I remember when we did have the meeting for a CBS fellowship, which is one of the top fellowships. You told me that I didn't need it at that point. Right. But what's funny is you was like, you're going to be staffed soon. And I was like, no way. But I don't know how you have this crystal ball. And I don't know how you're able to know, like, everybody I run into always talks about how important and influential you are in their career. So that's a definite skill.
Oh, that is really nice. And let me say what I appreciated when I told you that you didn't need the CBS program, instead of saying, and may I curse on this show?
Yes, it's two
writers. Instead of saying,
shit,
fuck you, I want to be in the program. You said, yeah. You were a little taken aback, but you said, yeah, I don't want to take a spot from somebody else who needs it. I thought, well, that's a very gracious person. So, yay. Sure.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, look, let's dive right in.
Yes.
Carol is a good friend of our dear friend of the pod, Adria Walden.
There we go.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yep. Now, yes. Carol, we understand that you're in a book club with Adria, which interests us a lot.
We are in a book club, and we are in a nonfiction book club, which reads, for the most part, these very heavy books. And the reason I did a nonfiction book club is because I read plenty of fiction, primarily detective novels. Don't tell anybody I said that, because that's so cheesy and lowbrow. And so I joined this group, and everybody's been in it for, I don't know, 15 years. And then Adria came in, and it was like breath of fresh air.
That's Adria.
That's Adria. And we got to hear all about her boyfriend. And so, you know, and we're all 100 years old. So it was like, yes, tell us about your boyfriend and stuff like that. So it was great.
Now, are you reading Britney Spears' memoir in your book club currently?
Oh, sure not.
Okay.
Are you?
Of course I am.
Listen.
Of course you are.
I saw somebody in the elevator, and I saw their phone that was hanging, and the Britney book was on audio book. So I was just like, man, everybody's listening to it right now. I can't.
Weeping listening to it.
Oh my God.
Are you really?
It's so sad. It is so sad.
For real. You're being for real.
Right? I'm being totally, totally for real. I would never not be for real with you, Carol.
Wow. Okay. Do I need to read the book? I mean, I'll read the book if I need to read
it. You can listen to it on Audible, and it's fast. It's like I think it's a little over 5 hours. So just pop it in while you're on your drive to the studio, and before you know it, you finish the book.
Okay. It's in the conversation. You know what I mean? So yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to listen to it also. So our show is about strictly for upcoming writers. And one thing that I think was a struggle for me early on that fellowships helped me out with was pitching, right? And so I think when we come up, you know, all we're doing is writing. And actually most of the job is going to be coming up with ideas and pitching. So we know you have a legendary course about pitching. Do you have a few tips you could give our listeners about the art of pitching, the do's and don'ts?
Sure. Shameless plug. The course is called How to pitch a TV show that sells. It's an online course. We're in week now, 3 of 5 weeks, and there's learning modules. And then there's 5 showrunner speakers that I bring in, and they demonstrate pitches. And Sean Ryan was one. He was amazing. Raelle Tucker came in and did one. She's just the best, you know, because you know from
Shout out Raelle. That's one of my mentors. Yep.
Yeah, she's amazing. And then Charmaine DeGrate came and spoke on Monday night. She didn't do a pitch. She just talked about pitching. And she was so forthright and honest and vulnerable. It was great. And then Amy Aniobi is speaking next week. And then Julie Pleck is the last week.
Love it.
So these are all like terrific people that have sold a number of shows. So I'm excited about it. Anyway, so the do's and don'ts. Don't not practice. Do not go in there off the cuff. It's disrespectful, and you have one shot at this, likely. If you're just starting out, you get that one shot. Prepare like your life depended on it, because your career life does depend on it. And I know showrunners that would not go into pitch unless they had practiced it 40 times.
Wow.
And one of the strategies is you write it out word for word, and then you practice that and practice that and practice that until you know it so well that you can do it conversationally. And it sounds like, oh, I'm just thinking of this right now. But of course you're not. You practice like a fiend. The other is always start with your inspiration story. Always start with what connects you to this material. Why you? Why you? Why not Melanie? Why you? Why not Saeed? If somebody else can write it, then you should not be writing. You should not be pitching if somebody else can do it. The other thing is, why? Why does this have to get made? I call this the hook in my class. Why now? Why does it have to get made? What is in the zeitgeist? What's in the culture right now that this speaks to and makes buyers go, yes, right now, right now. And I always say you start with that and you end with it. And what I call the ending, because I have 10 steps for this, is what I call the coda, which means a concluding remark. And it's sort of your mic drop. It's why they have to push the go button right now. And the guy who's coming to speak tomorrow night in the class was somebody who took that class 2 years ago. He learned everything in the class, and then his next pitch was at ABC, and he sold it in the room based on what he learned from the class. So that's very exciting. And be passionate.
Okay. I mean, that's a testimonial if I've ever heard one.
Don't think I didn't use that all over my website.
Actually, when you were speaking just now, Carol, I wanted to like take notes, and I had to remind myself that I'm not like taking your class. I'm hosting a podcast.
At the moment. We might. We're going to sign up after this. But
oh my God, I am. Wait, well, so tell us, when are you running this again?
Next year. I only Next do year. It once a year. Because I just don't have the bandwidth with everything else I'm doing to do it. I love it. I love doing it. I love working with, I just love writers. So I love getting to know them. And, you know, I do it in my classes. I do it in my programs. I do it in my one-on-one coaching. But pitching and this class has a special place in my heart.
Now, we are all pitching on Zoom now, which I'm sure you cover in your class. And I have to say, like, I do miss, like, coming from, like, a, you know, like a performing background, just like Saeed, you know, you really are an advantage, like, when you're going into a room, because so much of that is, like, being able to charm in person and, like, that charisma, that kind of chemistry that can just be really, really hard to translate over Zoom. You know, and also it's just, like, for me, when I would pitch in person, I would love to get like an outfit. You know what I mean? I'd be making a statement. I would just like really like juice myself up in the car on the way over there. You know, it's such a different experience. It's like now it's like, okay, I'm wearing like my house slippers. Like I'm at home. Like, you know? It is kind of hard to just sort of like psych yourself up in the same way and to kind of translate that same sort of like passion and enthusiasm. And also to, I think in person, people can kind of get a sense of you, right? Of like, oh, can I have confidence in this person that they can pull this off? You know, and I think it is harder to translate that over Zoom. Now, saying all of that, what elements should like a Zoom pitch have, and like how long should it be? Since we're not in person, we don't have all that, those juicy right. IRL things that we can do IRL.
First of all, I recommend that you don't do your Zoom in your house slippers, your workout pants, and your, I recommend you dress up the same way you would do if it was in real life. Absolutely. Make it shorter. They have less of an attention span. What I like to do is if you have any control over your time slot, make it about 11 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, executives will say, we can do it at 4. Fuck that. They really can't do it at 4 because they're exhausted, especially if they've been on Zoom. Mm-hmm. Not say anything bad about my friends, the executives, but you have to have higher energy, slightly higher energy to get over that virtual divide. And I would put in more personal things at the beginning. There's two things I would do. One is I'd let them know who you are a little bit more on Zoom because that'll be an emotional connection. And I would ask them questions to keep them engaged because they may be looking down at their phone. They may be looking at their computer. Who knows what they're doing? But every time you ask them a question, they're sort of whipped back and having to pay attention. So those are the things that I think you can do. And I'm not joking about dressing up. I mean, hype yourself up the same way. The good thing about Zoom is you can have your script all in front of you and nobody knows that you're doing it. You don't want to read it without having practiced it so much that you don't really need to read it.
Yeah, it is so key what you're saying about the time slot too, because 11 a.m. really is like the golden hour. It's like, they've had their coffee, you know, they're not like in that mad rush of like even a 10 a.m., right? And then it's like, also, I try to never, ever do a meeting that's like either at lunchtime because people might be hungry, they haven't had lunch yet, or right after lunch because people get a little sleepy after lunch.
Can I tell you a horrible story?
Please.
From my days as an executive at CBS, it is so painful. But I heard another one that was worse. I was in comedy development at CBS. This was after lunch, right after lunch. This guy came in. He had created a show a long time ago, and he thought he was all that. And he was pitching in the most monotone voice. He was going beat by beat by beat of the pilot. And my colleague fell asleep. And he literally closed his eyes and fell asleep. And the writer jumped up, and understandably so, incensed, and said, he's asleep. And my boss, God love him, said, no, he's just resting his eyes so he can concentrate on what you're saying. But it was like, oh my God, don't do it after lunch if you can possibly help it.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense because if you're going at 4 o'clock, they probably heard like 6 pitches that day or 5 pitches that day. Right. They'd be worn out, you know?
They are. It's why you have to come and bring that charm. You know what I mean? And engage them. I'm not kidding about the questions. It makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, I agree. That's, you know, one thing that was cool about your Mentorship Matters program, being aligned with Aaron Thomas, he allowed me to sit in him doing some pitches.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which was crazy because I think I had just, or I was about to get the Sony deal. And so seeing, like, because sometimes you have to see it, you know, like it's not just enough, you know, like seeing it, you're like, ooh, this is how you do it. And from him, he already sold SWAT. So like seeing him pitch or practice his pitch was just beneficial for me, you know? And then at the same time, when you see other people pitch, you could be like, ooh, I like that. Like I could use that and then add your style to it, you know? And so seeing is half of it.
I totally agree, which is why I think the class is so popular, is it's actually getting to watch master pitchers pitch, because most writers, you guys don't get to see people pitch. Mostly it's your, I mean, you got to see Aaron pitch. I mean, what a gift, but mostly it's just pitching to yourself or maybe one friend who's sort of at your level and hasn't, maybe has, maybe hasn't sold something. So yeah, totally agree.
At Austin Film Festival, a lot of feature writers came up to me and they were like asking me a lot of questions about features. And one thing we want to ask is for the feature writers out there, what is the difference kind of in pitching TV and features?
Sure.
Are there any like differences for them out there?
Yes, there certainly are. So many things are the same. So many, it's about the inspiration story. So many, it's about, so much is about the character. So much is about the world. What the difference is that in a television pitch, you have to show where the story engine is that's going to take you through either 8 episodes or 3 seasons, and that has to be in the pitch. In a feature, you just need to get people excited about those 3 acts. And give them enough to whet their appetite without telling them everything. And where, and you still want to do the major turns. You want to do the act breaks, even though they're not really act breaks, but you know where that act ends. And you want to keep people, what's the word? You know, grounded in where you are. So in Act One, Saeed is in his apartment and he finds a gold mine, and then. Now we're halfway through in Act Two and he is riding a skateboard. And then, you know, as we get into the final stages of this story, then just ground them in where you are in the story, because it's really easy to get lost.
Makes sense.
I'd love to tack onto that and say, like, when as writers, like, we get the opportunity to pitch on an OWA, an open writing assignment. And a lot of times it is a piece of IP. It's either an article that a production company has optioned or it's a book. Like, any particular thing that we should bring to those pitches?
Yes. So glad you asked that. That's almost like a ringer that you asked that. Here's the thing. You have to find a way to connect to the material personally and emotionally. You know, even if it's a sci-fi movie, if the heroine is, you know, dealing with her, living in her father's shadow, you have to find a way to connect with it. Even if it's genre, even if it's somebody else's IP, I mean, really spend the time to see where your connection is and then bring the passion to it, bring the enthusiasm to it. And again, even though 3 other people are pitching, you need to let them know why you are really the only one they should be in business with on this.
Yes. Okay. I'm like, am I thinking about this for a particular pitch coming up? I absolutely am. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Is this,
was that a personal question or not?
It was. Do you also give relationship advice, Carol? No.
Actually, the first time I taught a class in LA, it was how to find your soulmate, even in LA. I taught that class.
Oh my gosh. Wait,
okay, hold on. Saeed, could sign
why
up for
why
that?
Do you bring me up? This is like a running joke of our podcast. Like, no.
Tell me.
One day I will introduce the world of the podcast to my wonderful wife whenever I find her. But until
married? Not yet.
No, he's like waiting to meet Mrs. Balance.
Yeah, that's what it is. There you go.
Lady Balance.
That's
you know, there's so many of them out there, especially in LA. I'm sure it's very easy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's only 7 dating apps. So, you know, you got to spend time on them and write. If you spend like 10 minutes on each, you should be okay.
it can be a time suck and go nowhere. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
I was just, I was just telling, this isn't the topic of this podcast, I know, but I was just telling someone who, I was telling somebody that when I was single, and I was really single, I dated everybody in Hollywood, but I've been married now for 25 years. And this guy would call me like every month and a half or 2 months. And he'd say, I just love our relationship. I go, what? We don't have a relationship. So anyway.
In his mind.
Yeah.
In his world.
Can you blame him? We all wish we were in a relationship with Carol. Listen, a person can dream. Okay. Now, speaking of your courses, Carol, we notice you have another course called Get the F-U-C-K Unstuck. Yes. Now, is that about writer's block? And how can you solve that problem for us?
That's so good. And can I say fuck? Because it is get the fuck unstuck. It is for screenwriters primarily, although other people, I've had directors in that class too. It is what is your inner obstacles to achieving your goals. And we break it down into the smallest steps so that you can. And I have a way to deal with writer's block, which actually works, because I've had people who were mired in it and were able to get out of it using that technique. And you know how I said pitching was my favorite course? Well, probably Get the Fuck Unstuck is really my favorite course, but don't tell anybody in the pitching course. I love seeing people make changes in their lives. I mean, that probably is one of the most satisfying things for me, whether it's in my classes or programs or whatever, you know, it's just so gratifying.
It's funny because sometimes I feel like for instance, the strike, I have writer's block. And it's funny because I would be on the picket line. I'd be like, are you writing? Like, you know what I'm saying?
No one's writing.
Nobody's writing. But what's funny is pre-strike, we were like, all right, you know, you have your call with your manager. You're like, I'm going to write a new pilot. I'm going to write a new feature. I'm going to I'm going to spec 3 books. Like, and then you're on the picket line, you know, trying to find the right suntan lotion and the right shoes so you don't kill your feet. And, you know, you come home and you're tired. And it, like, we were all stuck in writer's block. And I feel like now we're trying to come out of it. You know, so yeah.
What I can tell you is that three of my clients did not, only one client wrote during the strike of these 4 clients. 3 of them felt horrible because the strike ended. They saw the strike ending. They went, oh shit, I meant,
that's how I was.
Damn, I meant to write something. And I said, do not feel bad. Nobody wrote except this one young woman. Nobody wrote. And as you're coming out of it, I think it's, I mean, the strike took such a toll on everybody. Yeah. And you have to find a way to replenish yourself and take care of yourself so you can get those, so you can be in the space for your creativity to flow. And that's, you know, that's challenging for sure. But what I always say is creativity in, creativity out. So instead of sitting at your desk trying to think of something, go to a museum, go to a play, read a book, read stupid magazine articles, go to a restaurant and eavesdrop on people. I mean, get something going in.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's funny because, you know, I spoke on a couple panels and one of them was breaking in. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about breaking in is like everybody's story is different, right? Mm-hmm. My story is different. It took me, I had a whole nother career, you know? So it's just like, and, you know, pretty much I have to tell people the same thing. I'm like, if you want to be a TV writer, you need to enter fellowships as soon as possible, I think, because like the 8 writers I came up with, 6 of us got in writers programs, and fast forward 3 years later, we all got staffed.
Yeah.
And our staffing job came from the programs.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I wanted to see what you think about the idea of, you know, it seems like these writer programs are breaking people. And also if you could just talk about the Paramount Writers Program.
Sure. Well, the Paramount Writers Program, believe it or not, I created it 20 years ago. We're going into the 20th year, if you can believe that.
Come on.
I know, right? And we have 15 showrunners from the people that just were breaking in, and nothing makes me more excited, more gratified is a better way to say it. I believe that is one of the best ways to break into the business. It's just, if you can get in, and they're incredibly competitive, but if you can get in, it's not easy street, but it puts you four steps ahead. And the Paramount program is one where you're put with two mentors, executives, and you write a new piece of material with those executives. And then I get you for 16 weeks, and we have 16 weeks of workshops. I bring in agents and managers, and I bring in a number of showrunners, and we do mock showrunner meetings, which is terrifying for the mentees because we're at a big table and they're in front of everybody with the showrunner and everybody else is watching them. But by the time they are done with the program, what people say is, it just wasn't that hard. I just wasn't as nervous because I'd been through it so many times. Another thing I really work with people on is what I call their personal PR strategy, their entertainment brand, and how to talk about themselves and know how to talk about themselves in a meeting. We spend a lot of time working on what are your stories that you're going to be bringing, because a showrunner, if you're in a showrunner meeting, they just want to know you have a shit ton of stories, that you're a story machine. And at first they think, we don't need to. Yes. Every week of 16 weeks, they have to bring a new story, and it makes their brains blow up, but they're ready when they have meetings. So that's really what the program is, the Paramount program.
Yeah. And it's funny, cause like I kind of represent the people who have second careers that enter fellowship. And so a lot of people are coming to me like, am I too old?
You know,
I'm like, no, like, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely
like,
not.
And I'll be like, how old are you? They're like 32. I'm like, man, if you don't get out of here, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, what I was doing when I was 32, like, you know, like, so, you know, if you're out there, if you're out there, like, don't be afraid to enter. And I would also say, like, life experience. I think one thing that Mel and I benefited from was having a lot of life experience, you know, which when you get in a room, that's what they're going to be siphoning. Is all that life experience.
And it doesn't matter how old you are. It matters what life you've lived, what stories you have to tell about it. I'm just piggybacking on what you said. And certainly if you have a specific life experience, you're an undertaker and they're doing 6 feet under again. Wow, how perfect. But we're looking for rich stories from people. I couldn't say it any better than you said it, which is do not be afraid to apply, 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 apply. And for the CBS program, you have to also do a letter of interest where here's the thing in CBS, one day we were CBS, another day.
Paramount.
What the hell? It is a third writing sample, because for Paramount, you need a spec and a pilot. A lot of places don't want specs anymore, and I think they're stupid. And people will come around to this because there's people like Courtney Kemp. She doesn't want to read your original. Right. How nice you have an original voice. She wants to know if you can write in somebody else's voice. So anyways, you have to do that. And the essay, it's not really an essay. It's a third writing sample. And you start off with a story. And, you know, it isn't a college essay. It's really a story about you and how you became a writer and what your journey is, and captivate people in the first two sentences.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, what kind of story is that?
and you know, what's interesting about that too is like, I think the moment I started, because people hate to write that's the thing they hate to write.
Right.
Like, I've pulled all the writers and they're like, I hate this. that we have to write. But I would say, you know, making that part, like, I think I remember I had entered for a year. I didn't place anything. And I kind of half-assed the essay part. And I remember, like, I was like, all right, I could tell I half-assed it. And I think I listened to an interview, probably yours, you're talking about how important it was. And I just spent like the first 3 months of the year just like working on that, you know, and like making sure it's exciting, it's a story, making sure I lean into like my voice and what, you know, why. And instead of just saying I grew up on TV, you know what I mean? Like, TV taught me. I know that was gonna get you, girl. Go ahead.
And a television was my babysitter. Right. I was a latchkey kid.
Right.
I learned everything about life from television. Yes.
Yeah.
That's, I love that you spent 3 months doing it. That's the amount of time that doesn't have to be quite the amount of time and effort that you put into writing a script. But you know what? You were exactly right to not half-ass it. It's super important. It's one of the things you're really being, when it comes down to, are you going to be invited in for an interview? We may love your scripts, but if your essay is so boring or annoying, then you may not get an interview. You may, but you want everything that can be, that you can stack in your favor, stacked in your favor.
So staying in the world of like The Room, and again, another one of your programs, we're really interested in show running from both sides, right? Like, so a lot of times as a first time creator, or even like a second time show creator, you're not going to show run your own show. So what is that relationship between a first time, second time show creator and the showrunner? And then on the flip side of it, how do we become good showrunners? Because it seems like so much of show running is not about writing, but rather about like people management.
It is exactly. And let me answer your last question first. The way you become a really good showrunner is having, first of all, going through the showrunner, the WGA showrunner training program, duh. And then the next thing is having leadership ability and being decisive and not being an asshole and bringing to your show compassion and humanity and treating it professionally. You need to know when to delegate. In the showrunner training program, Yvette Lee Bowser has delegate or die. And it's absolutely true. So the showrunner training program, the mantra is quality scripts on time. You need both of those things in order to have a successful show. But here's the truth. Creatively, your show may fail or your show may get canceled. What show doesn't? But if you've been a terrific manager and leader, you're going to have a chance to do it again. Even if your show is fabulous, but you're a terrible manager, you are late, you fight with people, you may not get another chance when your show fails. So that's what you want to do. Treat people well, be decisive, delegate, and have a vision. I can't tell you how upsetting it is for writers. And maybe you guys know this, when you got your first day in a room on a new show and the showrunner says, so what do you think? It's like, what? You're supposed to tell us what to, give us some direction. So being prepared is super important. And then back to being a show creator, you don't want to be a showrunner the first time. The job is impossible. You get $60, $80 million in one phone call and you're going to manage that and you've never done that before. Don't do that. That's a really bad idea. So you want a showrunner, but you want somebody who has read your script and is passionate about your script and is passionate about helping you succeed, not somebody who's there because they're on an overall deal and they're just phoning it in, or not somebody who's their pilot just got passed on, so they want to take it over. And first time creators and second time creators, you should have a say about who that showrunner is. Don't let people shove somebody down your throat. Say, I want to meet them. And then really see what their vibe is, whether they're somebody who's going to support you or somebody who's going to thwart you.
Great point.
And so how do we get into your showrunner training program? Like, can we apply or do you have to have certain requirements?
Yes, you do.
Sounds like another personal question by Mel.
So interesting.
So interesting. So here's what you need, Mel. You need somebody to recommend you first, a showrunner, a current or recent showrunner who's had a show, like if we're talking about applying this year, let's just say, somebody who showran a show from any time between 1920. Not 1920. Don't find somebody who was running a show in 1920.
Oh my God. Was that like silent movies like Charlie Chaplin?
Yeah, right. Oh my God. 2020 to 2023. Because the truth is, if somebody from 1920 did recommend you, you're not getting in. Anyway, so somebody from a showrunner who ran a show from 2020 to 2023, or a current or development executive, you have to be recommended by them. Mm-hmm. Then once you're recommended by them, you get an application, and there is an essay question in the application, which says, you know, why are you interested in the program? What are you hoping to get out of it? And then give an example of when you were a mentor. We do that because we want to see what kind of people we're talking about. So usually we get 160, 180 people applying for 30 slots. So there's an interview process. And I'm in every interview, but I also have a showrunner with me from the program, an alum. So we do the interview. And let me tell you what the requirements are. You have to be a senior level writer producer at the supervising producer level or above, and or have a script that's in a script, a pilot, or a series that's in active development at a network, a cable channel, or a streamer, and preferably that you've commenced. So that's what it takes to get in. And then the interview. And then the phone call. Congratulations, you're in. Mel, you're in.
You got that, Mel?
I got to work on that requirement list. I am missing a few items.
Oh, no.
Nah, you'll pick it up.
Yeah.
Back to the power of the spec and Courtney Kemp, who was amazing. I saw Courtney Kemp on the picket line. And one of the kings. Evil and Good Fight.
And Good Wife.
Good Wife and Good. I love all their stuff. And when I was in the program, the fellowship, also I had wrote two specs. So I have like an Atlanta and an Insecure. And one thing I love about that process that I try to give advice to young writers also is like, you need to write specs because one, it shows you what the job is going to be. Like before I got staffed on Flatbush Misdemeanors, Paramount, Showtime, I had to do research. I wasn't from Flatbush. I wasn't from Brooklyn. I had to study the scripts. It just so happened my pilot looked like their scripts. It was their tone, their comedy. But I still had to like do research when I'm writing Insecure. I'm like, what does Issa say? You know, what does her friends say? Like, where are the act breaks? Like, how do they cut out of scenes? And so that's really what you do in a writer's room is what you're going to do when you're writing specs. So do you want to talk a little bit about the power of the spec and why an upcoming writer out there should write a spec episode?
Absolutely. I actually think that it's absurd, although this is where the business is, to ask somebody who's never written a script before to write a pilot. Pilot, you tell me, guys, it's the most challenging form of screenplay there is. You have to introduce characters, tell a story with a beginning, middle, and an end, show where the show is going to go, where the series is going to go, hopefully have a great cliffhanger and a fabulous way to introduce characters and know what the series engine is and put that all in there and do it in 35 pages and now 40 pages or 60 pages. It's so much to ask of somebody who's just starting out. So what I think is write a spec first, because you're not creating the world. You're not creating the characters. You're just seeing if you can match their voice. And when I look at scripts, I say, do they have the tone of the show? Are the characters, have they captured the characters' vibe? Do the characters sound like the characters on the show? Is this a story that is fresh, but really fits in with the world of the show? It's like, you're not going to do an Atlanta. Well, maybe you would do an Atlanta where a spaceship comes down. maybe you do. Who knows? But it needs to stay within the reality of the world. Yeah. But it teaches you. I couldn't say it any better than you did, Saeed. It teaches you how to do the job, because that is the job, is to learn how to write in somebody else's voice, but bring your own creativity to it. And it's just an easier bite to take to begin.
Yeah, it's funny because even today, my reps said, we have this show that, you know, we want to send your stuff to. Do you have a sample? And I already was like, because the show is in the rap world, I already was like, oh, send them my Atlanta and then my original. Like, mm-hmm. I'll do that often too, because sometimes, you know, it allows them to see, you know, multiple sides of what you can do. And I still, sure. I've got hired off of my spec, you know?
Wow. So I love it.
Write specs.
Write specs. That's a new bumper sticker. Write specs.
T-shirt coming. Hey, Mel, coffee mug coming soon on the Patreon.
Oh my God. Listen, I really want merch. Okay. I want a bucket hat. I want a little beanie. You know, yep. Our little faces, maybe just our logo. I don't know, Carol. We'll get your input later.
Yeah, I think you should have merch. Merch is everything.
Merch is everything. Earlier, you sort of spoke briefly on how you guide writers in pitching themselves, like not just their projects, but sort of like how do you come up with your personal pitch as a writer? Yes. Which is, I know, something that Saeed worked on in the Nickelodeon program.
Yes. Is there a question there?
Yeah. So basically, as a writer, like how does one create their own personal sure. pitch, and how does one sort of come up with their personal like entertainment industry brand?
Right, right. Thank you. I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. I was just so captivated by what you were saying. And then we got to the end of it. And I thought, was there a question? I don't know. Here's what I do when I teach people. I think there's three components to your brand. One is what I call your personal logline, and it answers the question, what do you do? It's about a 30-second response, 30 or 40-second response. And as you both know, in Hollywood, everyone's going to ask you what you do. What they really want to know is, what can you do for them? But you have to answer the question, what do you do?
Sorry, then could you give us like an example of like what a logline for... I'm not going to say for me, even though I want to say for me, like, so like for Saeed, like what would be a log line for Saeed?
I remember mine. Actually, I think.
Go ahead. I could just, go ahead. Do
I
it.
I think it was, and this putting me on the spot. Thank you, Mel.
Sorry.
But I think it was something like, you know, I'm a rapper turned screenwriter that writes underdog stories. Like I'm a writer turned comedy screenwriter that writes underdog stories. Yep. And that was kind of like my one line brand for myself pitch.
That's it.
About what kind of writer I was.
That you couldn't have said it any better, you know? So that's kind of the answer to it. You're at a bar, you're at a networking event, you're at a party, you're at a business meeting. What do you do? That succinct is terrific. And if you can add a little bit more of your personal story, although you did, because I'm a rapper turned comedy screenwriter, that rapper turned comedy screenwriter says a lot. If you're not a rapper turned comedy screenwriter, you're going to have to dig a little deeper to find out what your compelling, you know, 30 seconds is. Then there's what I call your personal nuggets. And I stole that from Glenn Mazzara, you know, the showrunner in Walking Dead. Everybody knows the legendary, amazing Glenn Mazzara. And they're the anecdotes from your life. They're the stories of your life. They're what makes you you and different. Look, as an executive, you want to be the one I remember when the day is over and the week is over. And I will, you will be if you have like colorful and memorable stories. Then there's what I call your personal A story, which answers the question, which you've both got. You have both gotten this question a million times. You will a million more in your career. So tell me about yourself. And for me, that's about 2 minutes long. If you go longer than that, you're not reading the room right. And minute and a half to 2 minutes. And what I think it is a chronological narrative of your life with you as the protagonist. And it highlights your successes and the colorful, memorable things of your life. Not all of them, of course. And the narrative drive is where you started, what you had to overcome to get to where you are now, and where you want to go. And that's really the shape of that 1.5 to 2 minute conversation with anecdotes and stories woven in. And again, it's chronological. So it's the stories from, you know, when I was 5, I wrote my first comic book. That's right. How you start. And then you take us through that journey as a writer.
Right. Any advice for a writer out there that's listening to this or somebody who wants to be a writer? Do you have any like tips for them or books that they should read? And it could be one of your own, because I know you have one. You know,
I do.
Yes, please. Like, you have any advice for them who are like, look, I think I'm a writer. I want to be a writer in TV. How do I start?
That's a great question. I say this to my clients. I say it to people that ask me, you know, what do I do? And the first thing is go all in. Go all in on writing. Give yourself 1 year to go all in. Before you give up, before you say, I can't do this, before you say all in. And I think you need to learn the craft. There's a book that I think is fabulous, probably one of the best, on how you write a pilot and how you create a series. It's called The Hero Succeeds, and it's by K-A-M Miller. And the subtitle is How to Create a Character-Driven Series. So I would digest that and read that before you write your pilot. The amazing Nicole Levy, you know her book. I'm sure she's been on your show.
And no, she's coming. She's coming. Oh. I saw her at Austin Film Festival.
Oh, good, good. Well, you need to read her book if you want to be in a writer's room. And then, of course, there's my book, Hollywood Game Plan, How to Land a Job in Film, TV, or Digital Entertainment. But that's really if you're just starting out and you want to get a job as an assistant, or you want to get that first job in the business, not necessarily as a writer. So it's go all in. Here's what not to write. Please don't write this. Please don't write this as your first piece. There's somebody who's been very successful in a high profile business on the East Coast or the West Coast, New York or Los Angeles. They have something and they blow up their career and they have to go home to the Midwest and damn, take over their family's grocery store, insurance business, detective agent. Don't do that. Everybody does that. Don't do that. And don't write a period piece. Please don't write a period piece. Please write a contemporary piece. You know, learn the craft and then practice, make your job writing. And if your life permits, spend 3 hours a day, 4 days a week writing. And if you're an early morning person, get up earlier and do it. Everybody has to have a day job unless you're a trust fund person, and then why are you even listening to this? You could just buy your way in. You don't need this. but make the time and make the commitment and follow through on it and meet other writers. Listen to this podcast. I've listened to your podcast. You have amazing guests. You know what I mean? Learn everything that you can about the business. Go places where you can meet people. Do you know who Charles Murray is?
Definitely met. I gave him a hug when I went to the WGA showrunner meeting a couple weeks ago. I was like, you're legendary. And he hugged me.
He's the best. He's the best. He came here from Texas, I think. No, Kansas, someplace. I don't know where. And he didn't know anybody, but he was he's like 100 feet tall, right? He looks like a linebacker, but he's like this total nerd. He's just amazing. And he met a lot of people playing pickup basketball games in Hollywood. And some of those people have stayed his friends. So find a way that you can meet people in a casual kind of way. And here's the number one thing. Ask yourself when you meet somebody, what can I do for them? Instead of what can they do for me? I need to get something from them. Just honestly think, wow, the things I know, how could I help them? How can I help them? That really goes a long way.
Yeah, don't be in a rush to ask somebody to read your script.
Oh, like,
don't so meet sorry. Somebody and just say, can you read my script?
Like, yeah. My friend who's a staff writer had this great analogy. It's like, you don't know me. I'm walking down the street, okay? I don't know you. You see me and you say, will you help me move? It'll only take 2 hours, maybe three. And you know, I'm a nice guy. So I go, sure, I'll help you the first time. And then I'm walking down the street and three other people are asking me to help them move. Yep. You're asking me to take time away from my family and my life. And I don't know you. Why would I do that? Don't do that. Create a relationship with somebody, an authentic one. And then you might say, I know how busy you are, but you know, if you or somebody in your office or anybody you know could read this and tell me what you think. Don't ask for detailed notes. Again, you're asking me to take 3 hours of my life to do that. Anyways, that's my pet peeve. Sorry.
I love it.
No, that's excellent advice. And definitely it's so key to always have your first move forward be like, how can I add value?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and that goes so far. It goes so far, especially from someone who's used to like all day people want things from them all day, all day, all day. Like you will really stand out if you say, I can do this for you. Let me help you. Now, Carol, what don't you do? We understand that you also have a private coaching practice. how does one, hypothetically speaking, how does one sign up for that?
Yeah. What are you looking for? Please tell us about the private.
That's so funny. You said, what don't you do? And I thought, I don't walk the dog very often. But if you go to my website, carolkirshner.com, there's a place that's about coaching. And you would just fill out this little form about, you know, where you are in your career, what you want to do, what you're looking for in a coaching relationship. And why are you ready to do it now? I work primarily, my expertise is with writers and directors in the television space. I work with people that are just starting out and with people who are showrunners. For people who are just starting out, we can come up with a strategy for you. And for the people that are upper level, we talk about strategy, political strategies, and help them with their writer's block and meeting skills and stuff like that.
I think that's great. Like, it's funny because I also tell people outside of, you know, entering fellowships and all that stuff as soon as possible, you definitely need to have a vetted script. And at the same time, I do feel like I see a lot of writers who like go in a circle, you know, and waste 3 years in a circle. I feel like you do need help. So it's like, if you know, it's and make that happen. Like even, you know, sometimes, like you said, you got to sacrifice. I had a day job and I took at nighttime the UCLA online writing course. And, you know, I paid for the course and it was the best investment I ever, like, I've 100 times the amount of, you know what I mean? So it's just like,
yeah,
You got to invest in yourself. That's one thing I learned from music. If you're serious about your career, you should invest in your career, and you can keep a day job, preferably one that's slightly shitty, so you can think, so you can think and dream, you know, and, you know, like you said, give it your all and be for real about it. And because you don't want to just spin your wheels.
Yeah. And the truth is that it's like not everybody can get into a fellowship program. There's very few slots. So it's like, what other ways can you like elevate yourself? Right. And also it's like so much of this business is about being lucky, but I really believe you have to make your own luck. You know what I mean? Does that mean signing up for Carol's private coaching practice, her Unstuck Me class, her Pitch Me class, her WGA showrunner training program? Maybe it does.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, so this is the last question. We kind of always ask this question at the end because people want to know what Carol is reading, watching, and listening to. So this is, what three things does Carol love right now? One can be a book. The second one, music. The third one, a TV show. So please, what are you reading right now that you love?
Okay. One highbrow, one lowbrow. The highbrow is something called The Art Thief. It's fascinating. It's about this guy that stole millions and millions and millions of dollars of artwork from museums, did it for years before he got caught, and all he did was furnish his room with them. So, and just who that guy is and how he thought, that's fascinating. And then I'm reading detective novels. There's Louise Penny has a series called The Three Pines. It takes place in Three Pines. So that's my lowbrow. And then in television, highbrow, lowbrow is, I guess this is lowbrow. Last night we just watched Get Gaudy. Did you see that on Netflix?
No, that's next on my list.
I know, everybody's. It's really easy to watch. And it's like afterwards, you say, can I have the 3 hours for my life back? But you enjoyed it during the time you're doing it. I like The Morning Show. Talk about looking at train wrecks. That's really fun. Okay, here's another lowbrow one. There's something called The Big Day. It's a reality show about these multi-million dollar weddings in India because they know how to put on a wedding. And it's the wedding planners. So that's really fun. Now let me see if I can find something highbrow that I watch on television. I just saw that 6 Feet Under is coming back on Netflix. I will be serious? Watching that for sure.
Six Feet Under had probably the best ending of a TV show I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen 6 Feet Under, please watch it. And just to get to that finale is amazing.
It is. It's a wonderful, wonderful show. And
what are you listening to? Podcast or music?
Okay, podcasts. Podcasts are good. Your podcast.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's this is political. We don't have to get into it. It's not everybody. It's Pod Save America. I love that.
Nice.
Music. Am I stuck in the history in music? Why, yes, I am. So I can't even say it. It's too embarrassing. What I'm not going to tell you. But I do like, what did I just listen to? My daughter tells me shows because she's 27. I mean, tells me songs. And, Bad Bunny.
There we go. Hey.
I did not see that coming. I did not see that coming.
I know. Mm. That's all I can say. Okay, so it's Bad Bunny and Simon and Garfunkel. Okay, there you go.
There we go. Okay, you're taking me back. I worked at a record store, so I know Simon and Garfunkel for sure.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Carol, thank you so much for being on Two Writers Talking Shit. Can you leave? I know you're on Twitter. You want to leave your Twitter? I mean, it's not Twitter. It's X now. What is your handle?
At Carol Kirsch. And I just have to tell you this. I do a number of podcasts, and this is probably the most fun that I've had in a really long time. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh my God. High praise from a queen. Thank you, Carol.
I know.
You're welcome.
Okay, Saeed, another great episode.
Another great episode.
Two Writers
Talking
Shit.
Next time.
Two Writers Talking Shit is an original podcast created by Melanie Mars and Saeed Crumpler. Our producer is Kayla Guest. Our audio engineer is T. Kelly.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you damn well please. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and give us a glowing review.
If you're not going to give us 5 stars or any glowing reviews, then why even log on? Save your rants for an open mic.
If you have any questions for us, and I do mean any, you can email us at twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com. That's the number 2, and then writerstalkingshit@gmail.com.
See you next episode.
Bye.